It is 5 hours Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Steve Norman reporting, topping the news. Two attacks in Egypt's Sinai Peninsula Sunday killed at least 13 people, wounding dozens of others. At least 7 people died when a car bomb was detonated near a police station in El Arish, capital of North Sinai. In a separate attack, at least 6 soldiers were killed when a roadside bomb set off an armored military vehicle passed near Sheikh Zuwaid. A group called Ansar Beit al-Maqdis, which claims loyalty, that is, to the Islamic State, claimed responsibility. In Kenya, sleeping students awakened by a blast at the University of Nairobi's Kikuyu campus early Sunday panicked as they tried to escape when they believed there was a terrorist attack underway. One student was killed and as many as 150 were injured. Some students jumped from upper story windows. The blast caused by an overloaded electrical cable.
We had an hitch with the electricity. And then because we understand on the situation of the country, students took it like it was an attack. And that is why we had the panic.
Evanson Jatanto, a student on that campus. Sunday's incident follows the April 2nd attack by Al-Shabaab on Garissa University College in Kenya's northeast, where nearly 150 students were massacred. President Obama back in Washington following a historic face-to-face meeting with Cuban President Raul Castro when both attended the Summit of the Americas in Panama. The talks with Mr. Castro were strongly criticized by some Republican presidential hopefuls as bad diplomacy. President Obama announced last week that he will soon have a decision about removing Cuba from a list of state sponsors of terrorism. This is VOA News. Casualties, civilian casualties, are on the rise in Afghanistan. The United Nations saying they rose by 8% in the first 3 months of this year compared to the same period last year. Ayaz Gul has details.
The UN assistance mission in Afghanistan says fighting between Afghan security forces and Taliban insurgents has caused 136 deaths and 385 wounded in the first quarter of 2015. The latest figures released Sunday show a 43% rise in civilian casualties from mortars and rockets. But the UNAMA report noted total civilian casualties declined by 2% compared to the same period last year. It says Taliban insurgents are responsible for 73% of the total civilian casualties, with government forces responsible for 14%. Ayaz Gulf, Islamabad.
Russia has criticized 5 Nordic nations for signing a joint defense pact, accusing the governments of Iceland, Norway, Denmark, Finland, and Sweden of confrontational approaches to regional defense and security issues. Military tensions between Russia and Western governments have risen dramatically in the past 12 months as the pro-Russian rebellion in eastern Ukraine has gained strength. Casting herself as a champion of everyday Americans, former First Lady of the United States, Senator and Secretary of State Hillary Clinton announced Sunday she's running for president. In a video released on the internet and social media, people from all over the country spoke about their aspirations and what they hope to do with their lives in the days and years ahead. Then Clinton spoke.
I'm getting ready to do something, too. I'm running for president. Americans have fought their way back from tough economic times, but the deck is still stacked in favor of those at the top. Everyday Americans need a champion, and I want to be that champion. So you can do more than just get by. You can get ahead and stay ahead, because when families are strong, America is strong.
Republican presidential contenders are sounding off against the Clinton race. Texas Republican Senator Ted Cruz was the first in his party to announce for president. Kentucky Senator Rand Paul announced last week. Former Florida Governor Jeb Bush expected to make his bid for the Republican Party nomination for president soon. All have made public comments about Clinton and how they believe she is not presidential material. 21-year-old golfer Jordan Spieth won this year's Masters Tournament with a record-tying 18-under par 270, 4 shots ahead of American Phil Mickelson and South African Justin Rose. Get more at our website, voanews.com.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Bate in Washington. Today is Monday, April 13th. And here are some of the stories we are covering. Sudan holds presidential and parliamentary elections today, Monday.
It is free and fair because all candidates are allowed to have their representatives in the polling stations to stay with ballot boxes until the results are announced. So there is no way that this election is going to be not free.
Professor Mukhtar Al-Assam is chairman of Sudan's Electoral Commission, but major opposition parties are boycotting the vote on grounds it will not be free and fair. Nigeria's opposition APC says it's on the verge of a clean sweep in Saturday's gubernatorial elections. And the leader of South Africa's opposition Democratic Alliance Party says she's stepping down.
The way in which she's declared she's looking to hand over to the next generation of leadership is a good reflection on her as a leader. I think we haven't had enough of this kind of display of leadership in Africa, and I think it sets a good example for political leaders across the continent.
Tim Harris is a former member of parliament for the Democratic Alliance Party. Former U.S. Secretary of State Hillary Clinton declares her candidacy for the 2016 U.S. presidential election. And the World Health Organization warns against cesarean delivery when not medically necessary. Those stories plus Mark Omar Sports and our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. The chairman of Sudan's Independent National Electoral Commission says the country's April 13th presidential and parliamentary elections will be free and fair. Professor Mukhtar Al-Assam says all candidates are allowed to have their representatives at each polling station and stay with the ballot boxes until results are announced. But Sudan's main opposition parties are boycotting today's vote, saying it would not be free and fair because President Omar al-Bashir's ruling National Congress Party controls everything. Professor Al-Assam said Sudan is under a constitutional mandate to hold the elections because President Bashir's term ends this month.
45 political parties are participating in this election. They are competing into about 1,300 seats. And we have got about 3,500 candidates who are competing in those seats.
I've spoken with some main opposition parties, and they think that the process will not be free and fair.
It is free and fair because all candidates are allowed to have their representatives in the polling stations to stay with ballot boxes until the results are announced. So there is no way that this election is going to be not free. But of course, some political parties are boycotting. They are not participating, and that is their choice. This election has been announced since 2010. We have announced that in 2015, there's going to be election because the term of office of this government ends in April 2015. And we have to have an elected government. Otherwise, the government will not be a representative government. It won't be a legal government. It will not be a constitutional government. And this is the problem.
Do you think, therefore, some of the opposition parties that are not taking part, is it a mistake that they are not taking part?
Those political parties, all of them, understood since 2010 that there is going to be an election in 2015. And as I told you, I don't know any means by which a government can extend its terms of office.
The opposition claimed that President Bashir's ruling party controls everything.
Of course, this is not true. This is an independent commission. I'm the chairperson of that commission. We have been elected by the parliament since 2010. And when we are elected to this post, all political parties, the opposition, were part of the parliament who elected us. So this commission has been appointed, selected, and endorsed by a parliament in which the opposition, including SPLA, SPLM, were part of.
Professor, what do you think about the European Union? It says that it's not sending observers because it believes that the election will not be free and fair.
If they can tell me how can I have a legal constitutional government without election, I have got open ears to understand. But the European Union has got no answer. If we don't run an election in 2015, in April, then the whole Sudan will be at chaos. We will not have an acceptable government. We will not have a constitutional government.
Professor Mukhtar Al-Assam is chairman of Sudan's Independent National Electoral Commission. He was speaking with me from the capital, Khartoum. Today's Sudan elections are all but certain to usher in another five-year term for President Omar al-Bashir. As viewers Gabe Jaslow reports from Khartoum, the opposition and international groups have said an oppressive political environment in Sudan puts the credibility of the polls in doubt.
There is no doubt that President Bashir and his National Congress Party will be the ultimate winners of the election, which takes place over 3 days. For one, the opposition is boycotting the polls, and the president faces no real challenger. That has not stopped Mr. Bashir from pressing his political agenda and promoting the achievements of his administration. Final campaign rally Thursday at Khartoum National Stadium, Mr. Bashir promised peace and development, touted his country's military contributions to the Saudi-led military operation in Yemen, and took a swipe at his Western critics. "We thank God that our foreign relations are excellent," he said. "We have some problems with Western countries. You people know what these countries were. These were colonialist countries. They want people to bow down and to kiss their hands, but we will not do that." The 71-year-old leader first came to power in an Islamist-backed coup in 1989, wanted by the International Criminal Court for charges of genocide committed by armed forces in the Darfur region of Sudan. He is unwelcome in the West and widely condemned by human rights groups. But domestically, Mr. Bashir has been riding high on improved ties in the region, following a new agreement with Egypt and Ethiopia on the use of the Nile River they all share. Sudanese writer and academic Magdi Al-Ghazouli, speaking to VOA by Skype from Germany, said stronger ties with Saudi Arabia is also playing into the president's favor.
"One large chunk of Bashir's propaganda is to say that we've improved relations with Riyadh and we are expecting the rewards. Probably there will be some rewards, probably not as large as he claims them to be."
The opposition has boycotted this election, as many did in 2010, citing concerns about a lack of political space, continued suppression of critical voices, and the government's backtracking on an inclusive national dialogue. Deputy chair of the opposition National Umma Party, Fadlallah Burma Nasir, told VOA they do not trust the election will be fair.
"Surely, as they done in 2010, we consider that now the National Congress Party, just like people who are one-man show, they are running alone in the field. Nobody is running with them."
Foreign observers have also cast doubts on the credibility of the polls. The European Union, which sponsored the 2010 Sudan elections, declined to support this year's poll, saying in a statement last week that when civil and political rights are infringed, the upcoming elections cannot produce a credible result. Gabe Joslow, VOA News, Khartoum.
Nigeria's main opposition All Progressives Congress, APC party, says results released so far in Saturday's gubernatorial election show the APC is on the verge of a clean sweep of the ruling People's Democratic Party in most regions of the country. APC National Publicity Secretary Lyle Mohammed said the party's victory in the March 28 presidential election must have impacted positively the gubernatorial election. He also said both the gubernatorial and presidential election results indicate Nigerians are ready to punish bad governance with their vote.
"The results so far have shown that the opposition is making almost a clean sweep, especially in the northwest and the northeast part of Nigeria, while retaining its hold on the southwest part of Nigeria. And in Imo State is set to be declared, but right now, Lagos, Oyo, Ogun, you know, where the elections southwest, I think I can confirm that the opposition APC, they have won. In Katsina State, in Kaduna State, in Adamawa State, I can also confirm that we won. I'm told, but I cannot confirm that we have won in Plateau and but we are leading there. So clearly, it has been a gale of change, and the opposition APC clearly done much better than the ruling party in the Saturday governorship and the House of Assembly elections."
"Do you think the opposition is capitalizing on its victory in the presidential election?"
"I think it's much more than that. No doubt the victory at the national level must have impacted positively on the governorship election. But I can tell you that even if he has the governorship election first, we will still have won, you know, in those states.
Do you think, is this something that you can sustain in future elections?
Well, I think as long as the government of General Muhammad Buhari lives up to the expectations of Nigerians, and I think we have a burden that the Nigerian people have now recovered and regained power and are more than willing to reward any good government with their vote and punish any bad government with their vote.
Did you say that the APC won Lagos State?
Oh, we won Lagos State governorship election, and I think we must have won at least about 80% of the House of Assembly seats in Lagos State.
That is a lot of power. What are you going to do with the power?
Well, you see, for us, it's not powerful for our state. Don't forget that from the beginning, we told the world we were on a rescue mission. We want to rescue Nigeria from the brink. Our economy has collapsed. Corruption has grown wings. There's insecurity everywhere. And I think this will be the major focus of administration.
Lau Mohammed is the National Publicity Secretary of the opposition All Progressives Congress Party. He was speaking with me from the capital, Abuja. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Monday, April 13th. Daybreak Africa time is 16 and a half minutes past the hour. The outgoing leader of South Africa's main opposition Democratic Alliance, DA party, is being described as someone under whose leadership the party doubled its vote nationwide, cutting across race and gender. Helen Zille announced on Sunday that she's stepping down as party head. The Reuters news agency quotes the 62-year-old Zille as saying the time is right for her decision. Critics had described the party as a white party, and Zille's decision to step down comes as the party prepares to elect new leaders next month. Tim Harris, a former DA member of parliament, says under Zille's leadership, senior party positions have been diversified by race, a trend that he thinks might pave the way for the party to have its first black leader.
I think it's always a day for reflection when a political leader decides that they have taken their leadership as far as it can go. So I think the manner in which she's announced this, the way in which she's declared she's looking to hand over to the next generation of leadership is a good reflection on her as a leader. I think we haven't had enough of this kind of display of leadership in Africa, and I think it sets a good example for political leaders across the continent.
The criticism has been perhaps that the Democratic Alliance was, say, identified with being a white party. Do you think now this is going to open up the party?
Well, I think first you have to realize that her record shows that in 8 years as leader, she more than doubled the DA's vote from about 1.9 million when she took over to over 4 million today. That increase in voters was across race and gender and cultural divides in South Africa. She engineered and led a significant growth in the party support across racial lines. And I think that's the first thing you need to reflect on her leadership as a great achievement in terms of growing the party support in that way. Under her leadership as well, there's been a diversifying of senior positions in the party by race. And I think it's probably likely that we'll see that diversification continue even to the point where the party looks likely to have a black leader taking over from her, I would imagine.
The party is having its electoral conference next month, May, and some have even suggested that perhaps is she getting out just to make way for this possible black leadership?
Her record shows that it's possible for a leader of any race to grow support across racial lines. So really, it's a mistake to obsess about the race of the leader, I would think. The important thing is to look at how the party reflects the demographics of the country. And I think if you look at Helen Zille's record, she's taken it to a position where it better reflects the demographics of that country. She said today she would insist that her position of leader is held by an excellent person, regardless of their race. And I think given the history and the ideology of the Democratic Alliance, exactly the right position to take. I think the important thing is South Africa needs to move away from a situation where voting patterns are decided by race. And Helen Zille has taken the party far in that regard, and the next leadership will take it further.
Tim Harris is a former member of parliament for the Democratic Alliance Party of South Africa. You're speaking with me from South Africa. Former U.S. Secretary of State Hillary Clinton has formally entered the 2016 presidential race and is the immediate favorite for the Democratic Party's nomination. But as viewer Michael Bowman reports, Republicans already are taking aim at the one-time senator and former first lady who, at age 67, is making her second bid for the White House.
I'm running for president.
Hillary Clinton made it official, posting a web video highlighting the struggles and aspirations of ordinary citizens and proclaiming her desire to work for them.
Everyday Americans need a champion, and I want to be that champion.
The wife of former President Bill Clinton is focused on domestic concern, but her tenure as America's top diplomat during President Barack Obama's first term will bring scrutiny, including her use of a private email account for official business and State Department decision-making before the deadly 2012 assault on the U.S. diplomatic compound in Benghazi, Libya. Already, Republicans are vilifying Hillary Clinton's management style and record, including in this advertisement by Senator Rand Paul, who is seeking the Republican presidential nomination.
Hillary Clinton represents the worst of the Washington machine. The arrogance of power, corruption and cover-up, conflicts of interest, and failed leadership with tragic consequences.
President Obama has nothing but praise for Clinton.
She was an outstanding Secretary of State. She is my friend. I think she would be an excellent president.
I don't think emails or Benghazi will be deal breakers.
Political analyst Charlie Cook says Hillary Clinton is one of America's best-known public figures, for better or worse. With no Democratic challengers stepping up so far, she has a unique task ahead.
Hillary Clinton is going to be running against herself. I mean, she's got to show herself relevant in a 21st century. She's got to be more future-oriented than past.
And she must stand on her own despite being married to an ex-president and having served an administration that faces challenges from Ukraine to Yemen. On Sunday, she attempted to reintroduce herself to an American public frustrated with Washington and an electorate that rarely gives the White House to the same political party for three consecutive terms. Michael Bowman, VOA News, Washington.
The World Health Organization says the use of surgical childbirth or cesarean delivery is growing worldwide, particularly in high and middle-income countries. The WHO says it is concerned by the possible abuse of this important life-saving surgery. Lisa Schlein reports from WHO headquarters in Geneva.
The World Health Organization is a staunch supporter of cesarean sections when justified medically, because these operations can save lives. However, when a cesarean section is performed without medical need, it says mothers and their babies are put at risk of short and long-term health problems. Since 1985, health experts have considered the so-called ideal rate for C-sections to be between 10 and 15%. New studies show when the rates go below 10%, more mothers and babies die because they have no access to this life-saving intervention. This is borne out by statistics in Africa, which show a linkage between low C-section numbers and high mortality rates. On the other hand, studies indicate there is no evidence that mortality rates improve when the rate goes above 10%. Indeed, cesarean sections sometimes can have serious consequences. The director of WHO's Department of Reproductive Health and Research, Marlene Temmerman, tells VOA, a C-section is generally a safe operation, but risks to health do exist.
The chance of a complication is not that high, but the risk, the mortality can be very serious. You have like life-threatening complications due to bleedings, most of them. But also other complications like thromboembolic risks are higher after surgery than after a vaginal delivery.
However, Dr. Temmerman stresses a C-section is advisable when a vaginal delivery poses a risk to the mother or baby. For example, due to prolonged labor, fetal distress, or because the baby is in an abnormal position. She says she is concerned about the huge increase in the number of unnecessary cesarean sections being performed in both developed and developing countries. She says lifestyle issues generally are driving this epidemic of C-sections. As for the women, she says many prefer a C-section to a vaginal birth because they do not want the pain of delivery or may be afraid of the physical after effects. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Time now for Daybreak Africa Sports, and here is Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Good Monday morning to you, Mark.
Good morning, James. In our Daybreak Africa Sports News, we focus on the South African sub-youth, youth, junior and under-23 championships in Mangaung. Pierre Vermaak improved the South Africa youth 10,000-meter race walking record with a winning time of 44 minutes and 24.37 seconds on Saturday. Delighted with his success, Vermaak looks forward to the Africa Youth Championships in Mauritius later this month and the World Youth Championships in Cali, Colombia in July.
I felt the best I've ever felt in a race. I thank God for that. He was with me all the way, next to me, motivating me, everything. I'm so glad I did this. I can't ask for better.
Did you anticipate you'd break the record by such a wide margin?
I think I just did not think it's going to be that fast, but I thought to break the record with the minute, yes.
Going from here, what do you think? What are you planning?
2 weeks' time, I want to go to Mauritius for the African Youth Champs, and then I want to go to Colombia for the World Champs, and I want to go win there for the world title.
That was Pierre Vermaak, the South Africa youth 10,000-meter record holder, speaking in Mangaung. Meanwhile, the World Youth and Africa Junior Women's 400-meter hurdles champion, Giselle Mangama, won her race convincingly. The 17-year-old shares her experience, rising from complete obscurity to world prominence in less than a year.
Well, you know, as they say, you have to maintain your speed, your endurance, and your work throughout the years. And I'm trying to keep that on top of my level. Being here today really meant a lot because I just wanted to look where I am on this stage, because last year was my peaking stage. And this year I also want to keep on that level.
Actually, you started in Botswana and won the Africa Youth Champions, and then went to China and won the World. Now you've won also the Africa Junior Championship. How did you feel in Addis Ababa?
Well, coming from youth to junior, the first year, it's really stressful because they put so much pressure on you just to do your best. And well, can I tell you, when I first got onto that track, the first thing that came to my mind, oh my word, Giselle, are you really ready for this? And you know what, I just asked Jesus to help me throughout my race, and guess what, he did. So that is actually what keeps me going.
That was Giselle Mangaman, South Africa's World Youth and Africa Junior Women's 400 meter hurdles champion, speaking in Mangaung. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports News. I'm Mark Ouma in Mangaung, Free State Province in South Africa. Back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Mark. Have a good day. And briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. Voting in Nigeria's regional elections extended into Sunday in some parts of the country after irregularities were reported in several districts, particularly in the oil hub, River State. Voters were electing 36 state governors, with 29 of the races contested. Officials at the Independent Electoral Commission, headquarters in the capital Abuja, said voting on Saturday was marred by 66 incidents of violence at polling places. That is it for this Monday, April 13th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for starting this week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Shryak, as well as sports editor Mark Ouman, along with our engineer Aiden Utu, I'm James Butt in Washington, saying have a lovely week.
Next on Let's Talk, join host Sunday Shamari and his guests discussing the hip-hop culture. This lighthearted show covers topics of your interest with some hilarity. Let's Talk comes to you Mondays at 17:30 UTC, right here on VOA Africa. Next time on Straight Talk Africa, combating terrorism across the continent. From the Al-Shabaab militant massacre of nearly 100 university students in Kenya, to the kidnapping of 600 schoolgirls by Boko Haram. Is Africa's war on terrorism winnable? That's next time, right here on VOA Africa.